You are now tuned in to Shotgun Sports USA, powered by Winchester. Recorded in the U.S. and streaming all over the world, your host Justin Barker talks to shotgun shooters from all disciplines, championship-winning coaches, gun clubs, world-class target setters, vendors, and industry-leading companies that fuel the sport. If you're into clay target sports, you're at the right place for insider information from some of the best in the world every single week. Subscribe to our podcast, leave us a review, and connect with us on social media. You can also catch our episodes on ShotgunSportsUSA.com.
Being a brand name in the clay target industry, Rick Hemingway has said, "Have you ever noticed almost all major sporting events are being run by Pro-Matic traps?" I thought about that statement, and he's right. And you may want to consider that before making your next purchase. Rick is the largest Pro-Matic dealer specializing in individual and commercial trap sales. Rick provides skeet, trap, five-stand, and sporting clays designs, installs, and service. He also offers accessories such as solar panels, wireless release systems, as well as the hottest item on the market, the ClayBot by Rainier Products. Visit BackwoodsQuailClub.com or give Rick a call at 843-546-1466. Castellani Shooting Vests are manufactured in Italy and internationally recognized by elite shooters as the most popular lightweight shooting vest on the market. Castellani Vests are especially known for their Italian styling and superior craftsmanship and quality, making them a vest of choice for all shooting disciplines. Ultimate Shooting Accessories is the exclusive supplier for Castellani Vests in the United States. Visit ultimateshootingaccessories.com for more information and to place your order. This week, my guest was the first NSCA Hall of Fame inductee in 1998. He is an 8-time U.S. Open champion, a 23-time All-American. He has won 7 team gold medals shooting for Team USA. He is a trick shooter and simply one of the best to ever pull a trigger. Please welcome the legend, John Krueger. John, I would have to say that you're probably one of the biggest icons in this sport and one of the most dominant clay target shooters in history, and it's truly a privilege to be able to talk to you today. How are you?
Good.
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 Glad to have you on. And if everyone, I think everyone that shoots competitively definitely has heard of you, but if they haven't heard of you, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, I mean, I started shooting very young. I grew up in northern Iowa. Grafton, Iowa town, about 200, fortunate enough to be in that area where I could, you know, twin brother and I and brothers could all go out and shoot whenever we wanted to. You know, we hunted rabbits and pheasants and squirrels and everything else, but I never shot a shotgun until I was 22 years old.
Wow.
Wish I could have got started a little bit earlier. Clay target anyway, we shot shotgun a little bit, but you know, is it cheaper to buy a carton of 22 shells and go out and have fun?
So you were 22 before you shot a shotgun?
Clay target.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd shot shotgun a bit, but not all that much. A friend of mine asked me to fill in for a league in trap. I think that was probably about, 1981, 82, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And just kind of got going there. Went and shot that and liked it so much I went shooting registered trap with them the next weekend.
Do you think it hindered your performance at all starting at 22?
Oh no, I don't think so. I just think it would have been fun to,
yeah, okay,
you know, have started out like 9-10 years old like a lot of these guys. Would have been a lot of fun, I think.
Yeah. Where do you live at, John?
Franktown, Colorado.
How old are you now?
60.
You know, you're doing some woodwork on this. I guess that's your business now, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know.
For fun.
It's just something I really like doing, build cabinets and furniture, but a lot of wood turning, which I've done even the whole time I was shooting. And I get it. Some of the shoots, like the Kruger Cup, was all trophies. Last weekend, we had the Kruger Classic and gave 15 trophies, the tournings for that, and people seem to enjoy that. So.
Yeah, they're really cool. What's your website for people to go look at this stuff? You're on. I know you're on Facebook. It's probably Facebook where they need to go, isn't it?
Oh, JohnKrugerWoodArt.com.
Yeah, it's really cool. For those of you who don't know about that, go check it out. It's really neat. Look at the stuff he's done. Does a lot of trophies for some of these shoots, like he was saying, and they're really, really unique. So, John, what titles have you won that you're most proud of?
I mean, they're all fun titles. Well, I don't know if there's...
Which one stands out the most? Something has to stand out the most. Maybe all of the U.S. Open wins you've had?
Yeah, I had 8 of those, and... You know, being inducted, the first person inducted into the Hall of Fame, that's pretty cool to me.
That is neat. I did not know that. And I was looking at the Hall of Fame, you know, the past inductees into the Hall of Fame, and noticed that you were the first one, which I think was in... 98. First inductee to the Hall of Fame, which is really cool. So, yeah. 8 U.S. Open wins, you said?
Yeah.
A lot of people have asked, I've heard ask, well, where did John Kruger go? Where did he go?
No, I don't know, 35 years of running all over the world was enough. It just got so expensive to travel and do things. And I don't know, it's just kind of going on to another, my mind goes on to something else. You know, the woodworking, when we moved, I got to build a nice shop. You know, my wife's very supportive of that, Cynthia, and she still shoots. She still shoots competitively. I haven't for over six years now. So.
Yeah. Is it something that you plan on ever doing again competitively?
If my mind goes to that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But as far as right now, no.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I know exactly what you mean. If you're interested in it, you're interested in it. If you're not, you know, you want to do what you're interested in, having fun doing. So,
yeah.
How did you get started in competitive clay target shooting?
Well, a friend, he invited me to finish out. They were short a guy at a trap league. So, trap is how I got started. And then I think it was the fall of 1986. We're shooting trap up at Minneapolis Gun Club. And there was a sign on wall, Sporting Clays, which we knew nothing about. And that was at the Horse and Hunt Club, which was like 20-25 minutes away. So we thought, go over and see what that is.
Oh.
And man, once I shot it, I thought, I think this is cool. But, you know, I had a full troop trap gun, and it, you know, it was pretty obvious that, well, probably need a gun with chokes in it, but, you yeah. know, that's all part of the learning process. I mean, and it was very enjoyable. And I started probably next week or two, went up there a couple times. And then that winter I was fox hunting and seen this nice place that had a rappelling tower. The guy trained kids to rappel off it. He was ex-military. And I thought, well, that'd be a cool tower. So I went and asked if I could put a Sporting Clays course in. He goes, what the heck is that? And I kind of explained it to him. He goes, yeah, I don't care. So kind of partnered with him and another guy. And we put in the Sporting Clays course in 1987 in St. Anne's Ground, Iowa.
Did you enjoy trap as much as sporting? I'm assuming not.
Yeah. I mean, what's fun is I pretty much shot everything we shot. You know, Jalice, you know, pigeons, you know, Mexico and Europe and here in the United States, trap. I didn't shoot a whole lot of skeet, but a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just enjoyed shooting anything that had to do with the shotgun.
Yeah.
Pretty much. I mean, on 7 world gold medal championship teams on 7 different disciplines of shotgun. So. It's kind of fun.
So you were on 7 gold teams.
No, and all different disciplines of shotgun shooting.
Break that down for me, what you won.
As a team, you know, I always love team competition for some reason. And individual competition is one thing. Team thing is another mindset. Mm-hmm. I always liked the team shooting for Team USA and whatever, but, you know, the five stand, T-Task, Sporting, Pigeons, you know, Helice, you know, whatever it was, if they had a team thing, I wanted to be on that.
Did you have any formal coaching or instruction when you started, or did you learn this all by yourself?
I got one lesson from Jack Mitchell, who was from England. He'd come to the Horse and Hunt Club and, you know, just took one lesson with him, and he said, I can't really tell you anything other than you're going to be a champion someday. So I always appreciated that remark from him.
Well, he was right. You have to give him credit on what he knows what he's talking about, for sure. So you started shooting back before there was the NSCA, which was the United States Sporting Clays Association. What are the differences, or were there any differences in the two organizations?
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, quite a bit of difference back then. USSCA was just more for it. They didn't really help the clubs out much at all. It was just an organization run by a single individual, where the NSCA is a nonprofit 501c3. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their direction is to help the gun clubs, help the people, help the sport grow. And that's what excited me about Mike Hampton and Hal DuPont when they first asked me to be part of the NSCA. And we had a meeting in Chestertown, Maryland, and there was Dieter Krieghoff and just, you know, Hampton, Hal, a couple Skeet guys, Skip Hogan, who started the first Sporting Clays magazine. I don't know, it was 8 or 9 people, and that's pretty much how it got started.
When they invited you, this tells you how to tells people how early that you got involved. What's your NSCA number?
500029. Yeah. And I would have had number 3, Hampton said, but I was in Argentina dove hunting, so I didn't get back in time to get that number.
Wow. So who was 1 and 2? I'm assuming Hampton was 1.
No, Hal was 1.
Hal was 1.
I think Hampton was 2.
Okay. And you would have been 3. That's pretty neat.
That's what he says anyway. Who knows?
Yeah, who really knows? So who were the heavy hitters back then in the early days of Sporting Clays? Who were the guys that, oh gosh, they're going to be showing up to this shoot? Who were the heavy hitters?
Oh, Jibby Jewell, Andy Banks, you know, Bob Brister, great shot back then. I always remember his first tournament I ever went to was the national championships in Fulton, Texas.
Really?
And I always remember Bob. They had this big old oil derrick tower, and I'd never seen anything that high. It was like 110 feet. And they did 5 driven pair over your head, and he was the only. AJ Smith was there. Great shooter from England. I mean, multiple world champion. Bob Brister was the only one to run that tower, and we'll never forget that.
Shooting back then, I read some things about you that you used a shell unlike what a lot of the people use today. You used a slow shell.
I always did. Yep. I always did throughout my whole career.
Tell me a little bit about that and why.
You know, I won't argue with anybody. This is just my opinion. I won't argue with anybody mm-hmm. that up close you can smoke ball a target harder with a fast shell because the speed is there. Mm-hmm. And Jess Briley did testing on pigeon loads years ago when the max you could shoot was 1225 velocity. And then they went to shoot whatever you want. Mm-hmm. So these guys were shooting these 1350s. 1400, so he did testing on the 1350 versus 1225, and he said once it was beyond about 40 yards, there was no difference in speed because the faster you shove shot out of a gun, the quicker it slows down. It just physics. So in my mind, what do you need the fast target for, fast shell at distance, when there is no difference in the speed after 40 yards.
Yeah.
And a slower shell keeps a much better pattern. And anybody who's ever tested ammo will tell, you know, every one of them will tell you that. But the faster you shove shot out of a gun, the more erratic your patterns are. You know, that's like a spreader load. Have you ever seen a slow spreader load? I've never seen one.
Yeah.
They've got to have speed behind it. Yes, it has a different watt in it, whatever, but it still needs the speed to, you know, make the pattern wider. So I want pattern efficiency at distance more so than anything. But if I can find 1150s, 1165, Remington had for quite a while, but Winchester 1150, Fiocchi had 1150, anything I could get 1150 was perfect for me.
So if you go shoot a tournament tomorrow, you're going to go find you some 1150s.
Yep. And mostly all 1 ounce. Because, you know, I just don't like recoil.
So how have you seen the sport evolve? I know that when you started, it was hand-thrown traps, and I'm talking more or less scores, the tournaments, the people, the traveling. You know, did they used to stay in their zone? How have you seen the sport evolve?
Oh, you know, I think when I first began, it was more social. It wasn't, the competitive part was there, but not as intense as it is now. You know, people spend just an incredible amount of time practicing and trying to get, you know, to that top level, which, you know, back in the late 80s, early 90s, Wendell Cherry was probably the first guy that I, in my mind anyway, that just had a commitment to be, you know, the best and do whatever it took to be the best. So when he started instructing, well, then that follows his philosophy of, you know, if you're going to be the best, you better spend some time and money at it.
You know, Wendell, speaking of Wendell, he's had a lot of champions come up through the sport. Did you have anybody that you thought may be a champion or was a champion that you worked with?
A lot of them guys work with several people till they find somebody they like. But I mean, like I said, it's different back then, you know, so maybe we'll get a lesson or two. I mean, Zach showed me pictures of when he was 10 years old, and I gave him a lesson at the U.S. Open when it was in California. So, I mean, but, you know, you find who you like, you find who gives you that mindset of what you're looking for, and whether you know, everybody's got a different way of explaining things, so mm-hmm. how you perceive their explanation is different from person to person too. So you just find one you like and get after it.
You started trick shooting. Why did you want to get involved with trick shooting?
I think it was 1987 at the Horse and Hunt Club. Bob Allen and his boy Matt did a trick shooting exhibition at a shoot up there. And that's the first time I ever seen one. I thought that's pretty cool. So I went home and messed around with it and could do a lot of different things, so just kind of pursued that. When I worked up at Brush Creek after I quit shooting, I put a show on every Monday night, and that to me was just very enjoyable and a lot of fun.
What kind of trick shooting was it? Just shooting from the hip?
Well, I have to. I shoot a release trigger, and what's weird is I can do my whole trick shooting show with a pull trigger as long as I don't put it on my shoulder. The instant I put it on my shoulder, I can't pull the trigger. It shows you how messed up your mind gets, I guess.
Someone told me that you could shoot a golf ball further than some people could drive one with a golf club.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you hit it good and it's a good golf ball, you can drive out of sight almost.
That's crazy.
But a lacrosse ball goes further than a golf ball.
I wouldn't have thought that.
Well, it's just like a rubber Super Bowl, and man, when you put a load right in the middle of one of them, they just go and go and go. It's incredible how long they're in the air.
You'd never find them again, right? One thing that everybody knows John Krueger, is that you had an accident that's changed your shooting career forever. Can you go into what happened?
Yeah, I was doing a trick shooting show actually at a club in Richmond, Indiana. And after the show, we went to go shoot pigeons out of a barn. And there's an old cement silo there with a cement top on it. And there was probably 25 pigeons that wouldn't come out. So I thought, well, one of the props I used in the trick shooting show was a ping pong ball filled with explosives. When they throw it up in the air and shoot it, it goes off about like a half a stick of dynamite, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I was stupid and stuck a firecracker in it. I was going to get them pigeons out of that silo for these other guys to shoot. And it was a fast fuse. And all I remember just seeing the whole fuse turn red. And that was it.
That's crazy. So the what was you stuck the firecracker down into to the ball, and you was holding holding it until it got about ready to blow before you threw it. I'm assuming is what.
Well,
you did.
All I remember just seeing as soon as I put the match to it, the whole fuse. It was a fast fuse, I guess. Mm. The whole fuse turned red, and I remember trying to let go, but it wasn't quick enough.
Yeah. So what did you lose on your hand, on your right hand?
Everything but the little finger.
You're a really good shotgun shooter, and you lose everything but your little finger. How did this affect everything? How did it affect everything?
Oh, I mean, when you first do it, you think, geez, you know, is anything ever going to come back? I mean, I figured I'd have to shoot left-handed if I was going to shoot. I tried that a little bit, and that was really awkward. And then I was down visiting my captain, and I said, you know, I still had the cast on, and I said, my little finger, I can get it on that trigger and I can pull on it. And he said, well, let's go out and try it. So we went out and, you know, messed around a little bit. And he said, what do you think about putting Velcro around a glove and wrap it around the gun? So we tried that, and that worked better because I could, you know, hang on to the gun a little bit better. And then it progressed to a golf glove with Velcro on it, and then the stock manipulated to fit that little pad right on the side of the gun. And that ended up being the deal for it. But
yeah, so did you have to, I mean, you basically had to learn how to reshoot again by not being able to hold the gun the same way. I mean, you had to have.
Oh, you know, somewhat, but you know, in my mind, the left hand controls the gun anyway. Well, the right hand does pull the trigger. So it really didn't, you know, it really didn't matter all that much in my mind. I mean, I went, that happened June 16th, and I went to the Minnesota State shoot. I think that was the second week in August or first week in August, and ended up winning that, and then went down and won the world. Shoot at the, it was for the skeet, for the World Skeet Championship. They had a world championship and went down, won that. But after that Minnesota State shoot, they won 40 shoots in a row, never lost a one. So I think what you lose physically, you gain mentally, probably. But I lost the mental part of it somewhere a little bit.
So starting this 40 shoot win streak, how long after your accident, what did you start that?
Oh, it's probably, well, June 16th, and then probably I think it was the second week in August.
That's unbelievable that you won 40 straight, basically a month and a half after, or just like 2 months.
Yeah, that went on for 13 months, I think, 13 months.
That's unbelievable. So you're talking about your stock. You had to have stocks made to fit you. Kind of describe what you're talking about.
Well, where my hand, where the pistol grip is, it's just extended out a little bit so that pad in my hand that accommodated the Velcro on the golf glove would fit right into that.
Oh, I got you. It's like a flat spot right there instead of a pistol grip.
Yeah, and it isn't that I need it all that much. It takes a little bit of, people don't realize how much their right hand, or if you're right-handed, left-handed, if you're left-handed, I mean, left-handed, it absorbs a lot of recoil.
Yeah.
People don't realize. So more so than anything, it was to absorb a little bit of that recoil.
When you started shooting, how often did you practice?
Not a lot. I never did practice a lot. I'd rather go to shoots. I'd rather go to tournaments. So went to a lot of tournaments. And practice part of it to me, once in a while, I'd go shoot a little bit at a club or whatever, but not a regimented format of, you know, you have to do it, you know, so many times a week or a day or whatever. I'd rather go shoot pigeons and sparrows and starlings if I was going to shoot a lot.
So at your best, I was going to ask you, did you know, what kind of practice regimen did you have when you were at your best? But you didn't have one. You just shot tournaments.
And in the beginning too, I mean, in the winter time, I didn't shoot because Northern Iowa was really cold and I didn't like having a lot of clothes on and getting bad habits for when I started back up in the spring. So I just assumed, you know, start up in the spring with the clothes I'm normally wearing and not create any bad habits trying to shoot when it's 10 below.
Yeah. When you shot at a tournament, did you have like a squad that you shot with, or did that ever matter to you?
No, that never mattered.
Okay.
Most of the time it was just random squatting, but then, big shoots, you have friends. Scott Robertson, me and I were partners for 20 some years. So All the big shoots we'd shoot together.
You're setting targets for different tournaments all around the country. What are some of the tournaments that you shot this year or set this year?
I set the prelim and the main at the regional that was at Ben Avery in Phoenix, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a couple months ago, I guess. Last weekend, I just got done with my shoot up here, the Classic. We set targets for that, and Dustin Johns helped me with that, and few other guys. It's a lot of work put on a shoot. And then the Ohio State shoot is the first week in August, I think. So I'm going out and set targets for that.
All right. So as a target setter, what is your goal when setting a course?
My philosophy is I don't care whether it's FITAS, five stand, whatever. If it's a 100 bird event, I want 96, 97.
Mm-hmm.
At least. And if I can get to that, then I know in my mind it was fun for a lot of lower class people. If I make the top guys shoot in the high 80s, it's miserable for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because the quality of shooters, I mean, these guys are so good now. They're so good that even if you have a pretty difficult course, they'll probably still break 96, 97. But if you make it rough enough that they're not doing that, it's going to be miserable for a lot of people.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, the people that don't shoot as much or the people that are just starting out, when you have a course set that hard and you miss the, you know, first three, four, five stations, you're already down a good bit of birds. It don't make it any fun. It just makes you, you know, aggravated.
Yeah, you know, people associate FITAS with being a little bit tougher.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, this goes back 10 years or more. And you probably look back, but every regional, the master class was more people than AA, B, C, D, and E combined. Mm-hmm. And FITAS, every one of them for probably the last 10 years. So people associate that in their mind that, well, FITAS is harder than, I mean, regional, it's got, you know, 800-900 people. There's only half a dozen people in E-class. Well, you know, that got to tell you something.
So you think that all tournaments should be set that way then?
You know, in my mind, the game was designed for hunters to practice.
Mm-hmm.
And the targets would mimic, you know, game birds, whether it's ducks, pheasants, dove, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So if you got a 70-yard crosser out there, well, no ethical hunter is going to take a shot at a pheasant or anything else that far away.
Right.
Yes, it can be broke, but by very few people.
And that kind of leads me into this then. You were on the PSCA, and the targets on the PSCA were really challenging. Do you think the duration of the PSCA had a role in changing the sport as far as target presentations and then talent?
Not necessarily, no. The PSCA was only for the top shooters. Would you go to U.S. Open or Nationals or Regional or State Shoot or whatever, you got all the classes and the concurrence. That's the people, that's a lot of people you have to, satisfy and take care of. Mm-hmm. PSCA with just the top shooters, so target presentation is totally different in my mind for that type of format. That's like, going to the U.S. Open tennis tournament. Well, it's only going to be the top 100 people in the world,
yeah,
or the golf tournaments or whatever, but we got a game that got to take care of all the classes and, sub-junior, junior, ladies, veteran, super veteran, senior super veteran, and that new one they got, Legacy, for 80 and above. Well, that's a pretty broad spectrum of,
right,
people to satisfy.
Now, how long were you on the PSCA? 1 or 2 years?
Just a couple years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So all the top guys at the top of the game now were shooting back when you were at the top, right? What do you remember about these guys?
How very skilled these guys have become.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got people that's all they do. That's all they think about. That's all they want to do. And I think that's great. I've just never been that way. I've just had so many other things that I've liked to shoot all the other disciplines. I've liked do my woodworking. I like to set targets. I like to teach. So it was just a multitude of different things that made the sport enjoyable for me, not just the tournament aspect of it.
When was your last tournament? 16? I think it was 16.
16? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
So most of the guys that are at the top now were shooting with you for a long time.
Yeah. Well, that I don't know if that Finesi and a few of them other guys that I've seen shoot at the regionals, I can't remember them. But, every sport, you got new people that come into it. If you're not into it for 5 or 6 years, you're not going to know.
Are you going to the U.S. Open?
No.
All right. You made trophies for what shoot was that you made trophies for? Some upcoming shoot.
Well, there's six of them for 5 or 6 for the U.S. Open.
Okay. I thought so.
Yeah. And Pennsylvania State Shoot. And then Mike Hampton's looking at some for the Grand.
Nice.
Grand American, putting Remington and Federal because he worked for them.
Yeah.
We have a guy that does laser engraving, so they're pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What do you build most of that stuff out of? I know it's wood, but what kind of wood is it?
Oh, I've always liked burls. Burls are kind of an oddity in nature.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of clams and oysters in the world, but there's not many pearls.
Right.
There's a lot of trees in the world, but there's not many burls on them. So,
yeah.
I'm a poet. Don't even know it.
I was about to say the same thing. So there's a lot of stories floating around about you over the years, and I want to see if you remember anything about them. And for some reason, I've heard dragon's breath shotgun shells, and I have no clue what these people are talking about. What are they talking about?
Oh, there's, specialty shells for shotguns.
Yeah.
And that one, it's like shooting fireworks out of your shotgun. looks like a firework going off, but coming out of your shotgun. And I guess if you don't put them straight up in the air and you put them sideways, you might start the grass on fire. Didn't learn that the hard way.
What did you set on fire?
Scott Robertson did one of them at a pigeon shoot, and I told him to shoot straight up, and he didn't. So then 10 guys were out there trying to get the fire out.
Where do you get these at?
A guy sent me a bunch of stuff. It was all different kinds of, you know, tracer shotgun shells, ones that bolos, they call them. They have two little balls on them with a chain. It's just weird stuff.
It's like you're shooting a flamethrower.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. So you sat the whole field on fire with them.
Yeah.
You done any other crazy things like that?
Oh, no. Not me. It's always somebody else.
Yeah. You're just always there watching.
They blame it on me.
What about some experiences with rental cars overseas? You done anything with those?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we used to have a lot of fun in them rental cars. But, you know, Pat Litsky can tell you that story probably better than anybody.
Well, I'm just assuming you take a rental car and just treat it like a rental car then.
Pretty much. Yeah.
John don't like to, he don't like to tell his stories. He's trying to keep them all in. He don't want to get in trouble. Don't sound like.
Hopefully there's a 7-year limit on whether they come back at you or not.
Well, it's overseas. I mean, you're not even in the country anymore, you know?
Yeah.
So are you coaching at all? Now, or I heard you said you like to coach. Are you coaching anyone at all?
Yeah, here in Colorado. Yep. There's several gun clubs out here, Kiowa Creek, Colorado Clays, Great Guns, great place to go mess around. They got a big 90-foot tower, and there's not many big towers here. Colorado, well, that's probably the only one, really. Yeah, it's still enjoyable. That aspect of it still very enjoyable.
You said your wife's shooting still competitively.
She does well. I mean, she was All-American several years, and you know, at the end there, when I was shooting, I mean, in that period of time till now, I mean, to make an All-American team, you have to have shot well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care whether it's first, second, or third team.
Mm-hmm.
They had to have shot very well to accomplish that. And she's been on several teams, small gauge and open and ladies and everything else. So she does pretty good at it. But she doesn't. She just shoots kind of more of the local shoots now since I quit. And, but she still enjoys the competition part of it. So that's good.
You don't even go, do you? You stay at the house.
Yep. You know, it's a sport that over the years, I mean, this long in it, it just, I think it's just incredible how many people just have so much fun shooting at a clay target. And really, doesn't matter whether it's sporting clays or not, but, I mean, everybody has what they like as far as what they do with the shotgun. But sporting clays brought in so many people from the hunting world that, you know, to see so many people, I mean, in the percentage of people that just shoot the game and enjoy the game versus the competitive is just incredibly different.
That's right.
I mean, there's so many people that go 2-3 times a week and shoot, but have never shot a tournament. They don't care to, but they just love the crap out of the game.
Yeah. How do you think that you can get those people to get into the competition side? Do you think they ever will, or they just want to go shoot it to have fun?
Well, a lot of them do, you know, but if they go and they get their butts handed to them, they associate with what money they spend, how much pleasure they get out of what they spend.
Yeah.
So if they're not having fun doing it and they're just getting beat into the ground at these tournaments, they'd rather go shoot practice for, you know, shoot 3 or 4 times the amount of practice targets as a tournament goes to.
So if I said, John, tell me what you would do to improve this sport, what would be the first thing you would do?
Really, it's all it is just make it fun for everybody. And I don't care whether you're 8 years old or 80 years old, you know, breaking targets is what it's all about. Many people get into this game and it feels a little too difficult, so they transfer to trap or skeet. And nothing wrong with that. You got them into shooting clay targets.
Right.
And some of the people transfer from trap and skeet into sporting because it's more challenging. So wherever your balance there is that you can be comfortable with, that's what shotgun shooting and clay targets is. That's what it's all about. I mean, think about international trap and skeet. I mean, have you ever shot it?
No, I have not shot that, no.
Not many people do, because it's too difficult, very difficult. And yes, it's an Olympic sport, trap and skeet, but for older people that can't see the targets very well, if you can't see them very well, you can't react to them very well. An international skeet, you don't have a whole lot of time.
No, you don't have enough.
So there's a couple disciplines that actually show you what difficulty can do to a clay target game. I mean, when I first started shooting, there's only a handful of people in the country that shot international trap or skeet. Just a handful of people. Now, NSSF or whatever, it gives grants and things to put these fields in. And there's a lot more shooting it now than when I started, but there's still not very many.
Yeah, so the target, that just goes back to target presentation, you know.
You don't have to make it so easy that, you know, you got 1,000 straights, but if it has variety, if it has differences in speed, you know, that's the consistency of trap and skeet. The target's always the same speed, so becoming a machine and just repeating motion over and over and over, that can be had because there's no difference in speeds. In sporting clays, God, you get everything from a gravity rabbit rolling down the hill to a Batu target that going, you know, 130 miles an hour and everything in between. And it's, you know, having to be able to, the ability to deal with the differences. If you just crank everything up and throw it fast, well, that's for a handful of people.
Yeah.
That can handle that. If everything is varied in speed and just out there for them to make their own mistakes, that's a good game.
Yeah, agree 100%. I think that's you know, you can go to some of these shoots and it's always the same people at the top. And it's because they can shoot that kind of stuff. You never see anybody different up there because most of them can't.
It's always the same people at the top anyway. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether it's difficult or not. There's that handful of people that are so good at the game, it doesn't matter whether it's tennis or golf or basketball or baseball or anything. There's that handful of people that really do know how to handle whatever sport it is. So so you can beat that guy once in a while, but you don't beat him very often. Mm-mm. But yes, they do get beat once in a while, but still, it doesn't matter whether that pile up at the top is with 98s and 99s. It's still the same guys.
Yeah.
Or whether it's 88s or 89s, it's still the same guys.
Yeah.
Same exact guys.
Yeah.
That's why they're so good.
How do you think they got that good?
You know, competition is a mindset.
No.
You have to want to do it, and you have to want to do it in a certain way.
And they start thinking about it a long time before they show up. They don't just look at Facebook and say, "Oh, there's a tournament this weekend, let's go shoot it." You know, they've got it on schedules for months and even years out.
You know, and it's, again, those handful of guys that thought, I mean, George Digweed is so good at competition, you know, but in my mind, that guy, he would very rarely ever miss one that he shouldn't miss. And he was, he was pretty damn good at the hard ones, and that's a hard combination to beat. You know, John Bidwell won 3 World Feet Test Championships with 28-inch barrels. So, I mean, everybody can argue about barrels and shells and everything else. It's not, you know, it's the Indian, not the arrow.
Oh, yeah. So talk about, before I know you got things to do, but before we go, what did you used to shoot? What guns did you used to shoot? Or what did you end up shooting?
When I first started, I had a 303 Beretta.
Yeah.
And then went to classic doubles for a year. Then to Krieghoff, and was with Krieghoff for 25 years. And then Kohler for 4 or 5, something like that. And that was pretty much the whole gist of the guns.
I didn't know that you shot Kohler. I thought you ended with Krieghoff.
No.
Okay.
Nope.
I didn't know.
Ended with Kohler.
Well, hey, man, I know you got things to do. I appreciate you coming on, giving a little bit of your history, and I'm sure the people listening will enjoy it. I've had a lot of people ask about you to get you on here, and I'm glad you took some time out with me, and I really appreciate it.
Yep, thanks. Anytime.
All right, John, and we'll see you later. Thank you for joining me.
Okay.
All right, bud.
Okay, bye.